guys. My name is Taylor Cirillo, and this is the Look Back Podcast, a show that seeks to uncover the intangible ways culture intersects with our careers and ambitions. I've known my first guest for over a decade, and even then, during those tender youthful years, I admired her. If you were to ask Sagacy Roberts what she does, she would start by telling you that she is a generalist. And while at the moment her title reads UX designer, she is also a writer and entrepreneur. In David Epstein's book, Range, he says, career goals that once felt safe and certain can appear ludicrous when examined in the light of more self-knowledge. Our work preferences and our life preferences do not stay the same because we do not stay the same. During this episode, we talk with Sagacy about growing up West Indian, being a Black woman in tech, and having the courage to reinvent yourself at a moment's notice. I hope you enjoy our chat. And fun fact, we were wearing the exact same outfit. Here's the show. I'm gonna jump straight in.
Okay.
Your parents taught you about innovation.
Mm-hmm.
How? And tell us a bit about what it was like growing up from Caribbean cultures, but two very different ones.
Well, my dad's Trinidadian, my mm-hmm. mom's Jamaican. Mm-hmm. I think the Jamaican side would say that they're very different, but they are very much the same,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
I think my parents are triers. Like, they will try anything. My dad is not the kind of person who would be told no if he thinks something is possible. Mm. Then it's possible and he's going to do it. Mm. He is a lawyer, but recently got in, well, not recently, it's been the last maybe 20 years, has been in real estate. And it's a very, very different industry, of course, than like law is.
Yeah.
But he, I don't know, I think when he sets his mind to something, that's just, he accomplishes everything that he wants.
Wow. So. Was there one business venture that he had where you were like, Dad, what are you doing?
I mean, some of them didn't pan out.
Okay.
Like, there was one where he invested in this movie that, I mean.
He was a producer?
Yeah, he was a straight-up producer, and we got shirts from the movie. It was a whole thing. It just did not.
Do you remember the movie title?
Oh, God. I mean, I hope nobody looks it up. I think it was called, like, Breaking Point or something. It was a very, it's, like, straight-to-VHS kind of movie. But he's had more success in other ventures, but yeah, I think for him, the fact that he doesn't take failure as a sign to stop, he mm-hmm. always is trying to do something else. So,
wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing. And didn't he also have a restaurant or a club?
Oh, yeah. So when I was younger, he was always doing his private practice, but he had a club and a restaurant from before I was born until I was about maybe in middle school. And that was something that, again, he didn't come from any kind of restaurant hospitality experience, but saw that it was an opportunity and was like, let me just try this mm. and see what happens. You know,
mm-hmm.
I think that I learned a lot about, even if you're afraid of something, just embracing it and being like, what is the worst that could happen to
yeah.
you if you try?
Yeah.
You know, so that was a huge part of mine. And I think I also seeing so many different industries growing up was a way for me to kind of see what I might like as I got older, and seeing that you can also try different things.
So how did that affect just, I guess, the parent part of your dad? Was he home often?
No. Mm-hmm. And I think, so my mom was a stay-at-home mom. She definitely had jobs here and there. Like, she worked in real estate too for a little bit mm. and did a few things. But I think his idea of parenthood and fatherhood is, while, I mean, you're definitely going to be emotionally supportive of your child, a lot of it too is being financially supportive, being able to provide. I mean, the very like stereotypical Caribbean father mm-hmm. thing that you do. I mean, yeah. And I think I always admired how much he worked. I think something that I missed out on was that he didn't really teach me a lot about taking breaks and like taking care of yourself.
Wow.
So like, I still feel very guilty about taking time off, and I'm trying to unlearn that. But mm-hmm. I think, I guess I'd rather have that problem than the other problem, yeah. which is not being ambitious enough. So,
okay. I guess we should tell our listeners a little bit about our history. We went to the same private all-girls school, mm-hmm. and I do think our experiences were vastly different. So I'll hold off on telling.
That's very interesting, because I think ours were very similar.
Okay, so yeah, let's hear it.
Okay. Controversy. Okay.
Well, we were a part of a program called Prep for Prep, mm-hmm. and we entered our private school in seventh grade, and I remember there being a bit of competition because Prep told us they're only going to accept two. That's it. And I think about 10 of us were applying.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden you're looking at your 12-year-old friends.
Did you apply anywhere else?
I definitely did.
But was that your first choice?
That was my first choice.
Interesting.
And they ended up accepting like 5 of us.
Yeah. 5 of us.
And when I look back on that, just the pressure of being 12 and feeling as if I don't get into this school, that's my future's over.
But that's where it all starts. I think that felt so normal to me at the time. Mm. Like that amount of pressure on a 12-year-old to me was just like, I mean, of course.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
That is what's expected of us. And that was, I don't remember a time when that wasn't the case. I think there was always pressure on us to be, you know.
To be striving
for
the best immediately.
Yeah.
Okay, so I was an athlete, and I always considered you more of the creative.
Yeah, I was a writer. That was like my thing.
That was your identity.
Yeah.
When did you, do you remember the first time you told yourself, I am a writer? This is something I'm very good at.
Yes. I think, and it's interesting to look back now because I find that I tend to gravitate to things, or I used to gravitate to things that I know that I'm good at and didn't really stray away from that, which I think hindered me in some places. But when I was younger in elementary school, I was always told that I was a good writer and I enjoyed it. And so I was like, you know what? This is what I'm going to do.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember your...
like, mm-hmm. and it's easy and it works out.
Mm, it's easy.
Yeah. I loved easy. Easy was like my favorite thing. I didn't understand why I would do something that was difficult for me to do. If I could be exceptional at something, why shouldn't I do that?
Mm.
I don't believe that anymore, but that was my mindset when I was younger, for sure.
Do you remember your first story?
When I was in, I went to a school called PS276, and they gave us little booklets that looked like real books, and we had to, like,
That's
write
so
in.
Cool.
It was so cool. I forgot. It was about this, like, Jamaican princess was the most, but I thought it was a really good story.
Mm.
And so did other people. For a second grader, I feel like it was top-notch literature. So, yeah, that was definitely, I don't remember what it was called, but it was definitely like a Jamaican fairy tale.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
Oh, that's, I mean, what kid wouldn't love a Jamaican fairy tale? Were you writing, like, did she have an accent? Because that's how I'm seeing it.
I mean, I can't actually do a good Jamaican accent. That is my shame. The shame of my life that I cannot do a good Jamaican accent. So I feel like even in my head, I heard her, but I would never actually try to repeat it.
I won't try to imitate that.
Yeah,
either.
No, don't. I was trying to head that off too. It was like, don't
worry.
Don't do it.
So you went to Dartmouth,
mm-hmm.
class of 2014.
Mm-hmm.
Did you go in thinking, well, you were an English lit major, so that part of you is still saying, I'm going to be a writer. But what did you think your career would be after you graduated?
I thought I was going to work in entertainment forever.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to work in TV. I wanted to be a showrunner. And that was always the eventual goal. And it's really interesting because Shonda Rhimes came to Dartmouth for my graduation and she spoke at my graduation. And her whole speech was like, when I graduated from Dartmouth, I wanted to be Toni Morrison so badly. I thought I was going to be the next Toni Morrison. And then she ended up becoming the next Shonda Rhimes. She was a TV person. She wasn't writing the books that she thought she'd be writing.
Yeah.
And I heard her, but I didn't listen because I was literally just like, I'll be the next Shonda Rhimes. As soon as I graduate, that's like the next thing I'll do.
Yeah.
And as time went on, I realized that wasn't really, not that I don't still love writing, but I think that there are other ways that I'd like to get into television. Mm. And I think I'd probably want to do that more through tech now than I would necessarily through writing.
Ooh, okay. What is it like being a Black woman in tech? Because those numbers are...
Yeah.
I mean, I was doing some research between Apple, Facebook, Microsoft, Instagram. Mm-hmm. I think the number of Latin and Black women is less than 5%.
Yeah.
So... Are you the only Black woman at your job now?
I'm the only Black person the tech team.
Okay.
On the tech team.
Okay.
and there are two other Black employees at the company. Okay. It's a company of about 100, a little over 100 people. And I think I will say being at our private school and going to Dartmouth, that prepared me for being in an environment where I was the minority. And I do think that I've taken a different approach to expressing my identity in these situations. I think when I was younger, I kind of minimized that more. And I think now, especially that, I mean, not to be cynical, but diversity is such like a buzzword now. And people are just like, oh, we want to be diverse. Especially, I think, in tech, that is something that they say a lot.
Even though the numbers aren't moving.
Even though that's not necessarily the truth or what their actions actually speak to. But I think... I do play up that part a little bit more because I'm saying if you want to say that you want diversity, I'm telling you that I'm right here.
Mm.
And if that's what's important to you, then prove it.
Mm.
You know, I think, though, it hasn't been too difficult only because it's something that I'm accustomed to. I think that if I had come from not ever having had that experience, it would have been insanely difficult to jump into that because I think you're used to like dealing with the microaggressions at work. And I mean, I'm sure even at your job, just any job, that's something that you're going to deal with.
Yeah.
So you know how to handle it.
Mm-hmm. So how did Sagacy the writer go from writing English Lit to being a UX designer? And can you explain what UX design is?
Yeah, so UX design is user experience. It's designing user experience. It is the way that users interact with any technological experience, any digital experience. So anything from understanding user behavior and why they want certain things, what they need from their tech, and being able to design something that is intuitive for them to use, something that both fills their need, the market need, the business need, and is also beautiful and aesthetically pleasing.
Mm.
So... for me, I think they do overlap because a lot of UX design is about storytelling and understanding, you know, it goes from, it's not characters anymore, it's users, but it's essentially the same thing. And I think for me, writing was something that I loved, but especially in these kinds of creative pursuits, it's so hard to make money up front. And I never really romanticized the idea of the starving artist. I had no interest in being someone who was dedicated to their art, but couldn't support myself.
Mm.
So I needed to find something that allowed me to be creative and also make money. I never thought that visual art would be the thing that did that because in school I was not at all someone who did art ever. Like I didn't draw, didn't paint, didn't like, I mean, I doodled. It like there's, it was never something that crossed my mind. I never thought that I was capable of that. But I found myself at a crossroads about 2 years ago and I was just like, I need to try something else. And I had a friend who recently finished a coding boot camp and I met her coworkers. One of them was a UX designer and I heard about it and I was just like, this sounds like something that I could at least try.
Hmm.
And what's the harm in trying?
But how did you find the strength to do something that wasn't easy?
I don't think I didn't know. I had no expectations,
okay.
You know, because I didn't know if it was going to be easy or hard. I knew that I liked the psychology of UX design. I think because I'd never attempted art before, I didn't have the expectation that it would be either hard or difficult. I just didn't know.
Okay.
It was just a mystery to me. And so I think when I started and realized that it was something that I enjoyed, I could, you know, manage through the part that was challenging.
What was the most challenging part?
I think the hardest part of it was probably really fine-tuning my eye for visual design. I think that right now, surprisingly, that is a strength of mine, but it definitely didn't start out that way. And I think it took a lot of time of trying to like see things through different eyes and trying to think like an artist and trying to be more observant. Because I'm also, I was not a particularly observant person before doing this kind of job. And I think now that's trained me to really start to notice things more in like the world around me and just in art. So that was been.
What is the importance of both having empathy and diversity in tech?
I mean, empathy is one of the core values of UX design, because to understand your users, you have to have empathy for them. Mm-hmm. I think that I'm someone who is very much a generalist, and I believe that if I had to choose between being a generalist and a specialist, I'd always choose being a generalist. Mm-hmm. I think having multiple contexts and multiple like problem-solving schemas to figure things out with is always going to be the best way to approach a problem. I think that in tech, a lot of the time, there's still so much that's new there, and there's still so much that we don't know and are trying to figure out, and there's like new technologies. And so it's kind of, I think, being able to bring other industries and other experiences into that thought process is kind of what makes it so unique and what makes it so fun for me too.
Hmm. So I read something pretty scary that self-driving cars have not been able to recognize dark-skinned pedestrians.
Mm.
Have you encountered a product which had a creator flaw such as that?
Yeah, of course. I mean, I think because tech is not particularly diverse right now, I think like the very big example from a few years ago, I actually don't remember how long ago it was, but Apple's health widget, health mm-hmm. thing, their mm-hmm. app, whatever, didn't have a period tracker in there.
Oh,
because the people, it was only men on the team, they didn't consider that like menstruation was something that was mm-hmm. important to track. They just didn't think of it.
Mm.
A lot of the time, it's more just like a blind spot. They just don't think of it as something to include.
Yeah.
I think even now, especially, I think it's hard also being the only Black person on my team, because I find that I have to kind of sneak things in for users like me. I think it's difficult sometimes to outright say that Black users need this, or
yeah.
people of color need this, or women need this. I think sometimes it's more for it to be palatable to other stakeholders, you have to kind of make it seem like it's for everyone and then find ways to sneak in those small moments of delight or usefulness for users like yourself.
Mm. So for let's say they're young women who are listening to this who are like, wow, I've always dreamt of being in tech, and actually UX design is something that I've wanted to do, who don't have the same educational background as you.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any advice you would give them?
Yeah. UX design is a very interesting field, because I think for right now, I mean, there are starting to be a couple more accredited programs in colleges, but when I was at Dartmouth, they didn't have like a UX design major. So there aren't as many really strict ways of getting into it. You can kind of come from it from whatever. So I came from it, of course, from entertainment. I know other people who were, you know, actual graphic designers, people who came from like research backgrounds, like all different kinds of things. So I think it's more about diving deep into your skill set and learning how to frame that in a way that makes sense for this kind of job, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Because I do think that there are so many different entry points and so many different industries that would work for that. Like, even if you're someone, let's say you work in like customer support, that is empathy.
Mm.
You know what I mean? That's also mm-hmm. figuring out how to talk to people, how to figure out how they're feeling, how to be able to, you know, and you can be maybe like a really good UX researcher one day, or like a good UX interviewer. So I think it's thinking, I mean, a cliche, but thinking outside of the box and like figuring out, you know, how can this apply to UX design? Because mm-hmm. it really, you can do it no matter what you've mm-hmm. done in the past.
How does Blackness define your leadership skills?
I think it's something, I don't know, it's an interesting question, because I find that for me, when I think about my identity, and I am curious to know how other Black women feel about this, but I find that my Blackness is always the first thing.
Mm.
It comes even sometimes before my womanness, necessarily, or my sexuality or anything else. I find that my Blackness tends to define more about the way that I interact with the world. And then, not that it's, they obviously intersect, but I think that when it comes down to it, I find that that identity is often more, it pulls me more, I guess, than normal.
Mm.
Oh, God, David. Can I say?
Yes, you can.
Taylor's boyfriend is out here taking pictures. What a hype man. I love it. This is amazing. Oh, we should also talk about partnership. I'm actually going to just bring that up right now because I'm very into this. I would say that for me, I'm someone who I've learned, while I can do things on my own, I find it so much easier, so much better, and more fulfilling when I share that with someone else and I have a partner. And I think that finding a partner, like your romantic partner or like a partner in business or like just a friend that you can consider a partner, because a partnership feels different than just like your average like boyfriend, girlfriend, friend, whatever.
Definitely.
It is, it's a very unique thing, and not just anyone can fill that role for you. So I do feel like for me, that is also a huge part. Like finding the right person to work with is just as important sometimes as like the work itself that I'm doing.
So one of my weaknesses is finishing. But I think you're very good at that.
I think I have learned what I need to actually accomplish something. I'm someone that relies on external accountability. I don't actually have a really good, like if I'm the only person that knows about a goal, I don't often meet the goal, to be honest.
Okay, okay.
So I think if I know I really want something badly, I'll do what I can to make sure there are other people or like, for example, when I did that UX design boot camp, it was a boot camp. So I had people who were like, you have to get this assignment and you got to do X, Y, and Z. When I have, if I want to get in shape, I'm doing ClassPass and I have like a $20, you know, fine if I miss the class, you know?
That really gets me in.
It gets you. It gets everybody. Man. It's like, I can't just give up my $20.
Exactly. I might as well go.
Exactly. So it's like, I know that I rely on external accountability and I just make sure that's peppered in throughout the process because then I know for a fact that I'll get it done. And another thing with having a partner, if someone's relying on me, especially someone that I care about is relying on me, then I'll make sure that I do the thing. But if it's just me, I'll be like, oh, I could just stay in bed a little bit longer and watch some TV or, you know. So.
No, that's a great point. Actually, with the show, I think the only reason why we're here is because I told too many people about it.
That's literally it. You got to tell everybody so that when they ask,
they're like, so what's going on with that?
Yeah, I think embarrassment and the possibility of embarrassment is a really good motivator.
Huge. It's huge. I guess we're just some of, you know, there's someone listening who's like, y'all need to get it together.
I know. I'm always so impressed with those people, though, who are like self-motivators. I think that's great. It's a very unique thing. And
it's not for us.
I feel like, I don't know if you can learn that. That's something that's hard.
I agree. I agree. Yeah. A friend of mine, a very close friend, she did a post back and now she just matched with her dental, her new residency awesome. Program. I don't even know if I'm saying that right. She was like my procrastination partner. So I said to her, I said, Kelly, how did you accomplish this?
How did you abandon me like this?
How dare you be successful? And she said that dedication is self-love. It's extremely difficult to do, but it feels really good. And she just got addicted to that feeling of accomplishing her goals. So maybe we'll get there.
Yeah. There's a line in Grey's Anatomy from Christina Yang, and I'm not, I don't, it's very extreme, so I don't necessarily agree with this, but she said that mediocrity is a sign of self-loathing.
Oh my God.
Like, that is extreme. However, I think that if you care enough about yourself and care about what you're doing, you do want to strive for excellence. So
that's true.
Yeah.
There's a big one I didn't ask you, which is how are you using your new career, your new skill set in tech to better the lives of women of color and people of color?
Yeah. So my side business right now is called Proof, and it's basically a business that helps entrepreneurs, women of color entrepreneurs, with any of their like business needs, whether it's like UX design or marketing, anything like that. And when I think about what meaning my life would have, I think it's important to me that Black women are better off for me having been here, even if it doesn't have to be something huge, obviously as big as possible, but I want their status in the world to be better than it was if I weren't here.
I love that. I love that. Can you give us a small example of how you're already accomplishing that?
I mean, I think right now it's on the individual level, helping women of color and Black women specifically who are starting businesses and trying to be entrepreneurs and don't know where to start, just helping to guide that process. But I think in the future, when I think about what kinds of projects I'd want to take on, I really want to focus more on mental health and therapy for Black women. I think, honestly, just like healthcare as it relates to Black women is incredibly important to me. Education and like financial independence are like the trifecta of what I feel like, you know, could really make a difference.
Yeah.
So I think as I have the resources to take on those kinds of projects, that's where my focus would be.
I love that. So my final question is, future Sagacy, when she's looking back at this moment, your 27th year, what is she going to be most proud of?
I think this is the first time in my life that I'm really trying to put myself first and really make sure that I am happy and the things that I'm, any action that I'm taking is moving towards being a better person, a more content person. I think a lot of the time I was so focused on what I was supposed to be and who I was supposed to be and what my parents thought I should be or what even just my friends expected of me. And it's just, I think now fully falling into just the idea of doing what I need to do just for myself.
Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks
you for being vulnerable. And I'm so grateful for your friendship.
Oh, me too.
All right. Thank you. Yeah. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Hey, guys. Thank you so much for tuning in. And if you enjoyed that episode, please do me a huge favor and rate, review, and subscribe. In the meantime, I hope you have a terrific week, and I can't wait to see you again next episode. Bye.